Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by JavaScript. Who knew you'd grow up to be so successful? Episode 184, Ignite Flame.
Hey everyone, welcome to the React Native Radio Podcast, where we explore React Native together. I'm your host, Jamin Holmgren. Today we are doing a special episode where it's just going to be the two of us, Harris and I. Aditi and Robin couldn't make it today. How are you doing, Harris?
I'm good. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing okay. We'll have to forge ahead without Aditi and Robin. They usually are the stars of the show, but we'll try to do our best imitation of them. where are you today, Harris? You're in, you know, today in Adventures of, or what is it? Where's Harris? Where's Harris? Yeah. Sort of like, where's Waldo?
Yeah, where's Harris around the world? Yeah, I'm still in Vancouver City.
Okay.
Yeah, just from last time, just changed neighborhoods. And mm-hmm. I'm here until, you know, for the foreseeable future. We'll see if I can make it back to Montreal for Christmas. But I am trying to be, I'm going with the regulations, so I might not be able to go. But we'll see.
Yeah, things are probably locking down around there as well.
Yeah.
So how are things going in Canada in general?
Yeah, it's interesting. We're probably stricter because mm-hmm. we have like sort of the maritime provinces on the East Coast, which basically have no cases of COVID.
Okay.
Yeah, they've created what they call a maritime bubble. So if you're not already in the maritime province, you pretty much can't go. And if you do go, you have to quarantine within their facilities. So it's extremely like, So it's really hard to get there. So even though I'm in Canada, I actually technically cannot travel anywhere in Canada easily. Yeah. In Quebec, they have strict lockdown. So no gatherings. So no Christmas, basically no gatherings.
Wow.
Yeah. Around Christmas at all, which is why I might stay.
Yeah. They're certainly locking down here in Washington state as well. The cases are rising. I saw a graphic, not to dwell on this too much, but I saw a graphic saying, you know, sort of like the deadliest days in American history. And, you know, there's the usuals like 9/11 and stuff, but then it said last Thursday was right there. You know, it's that bad. So pretty tough, but, you know, hopefully we can get through it and, you know, hopefully the vaccine's on the way and we can move forward. But we're not here to talk about medical things, pandemics and the like. We are here to talk about React Native. Before we get into that, I'd like to say that this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red. Infinite Red is a premier React Native design and development agency located fully remote in the USA and Canada. With years of React Native experience and deep roots in the React Native community, we are the hosts of Chain React, and we publish the React Native newsletter to over 11,000 subscribers. I think it's actually 12,000 now. I should update my notes. Infinite Red is the best choice for your next React Native app. Hit us up at hello@infinite.red. You can email me directly at jamin@infinite.red. And you can also learn more at our website, infinite.red. If you put infinite.red/React Native, you'll get more React Native focused content. So we actually just published that page the other day. It's looking really nice. Cool. So let's talk about our topic. It's a library that's near and dear to my heart. I've been working on it as, I guess you could say, the core maintainer for many years now. And that's our open source library, Ignite. We're going to talk about that today because I've been working on it for the past several months doing a major update. We are on version 3.something right now. We've gone through several iterations in the past. So I'll talk a little bit more about what Ignite is. Just for the listeners, just to let people know kind of, you know, what's going on here. Harris has contributed to Ignite. He's, you know, certainly very knowledgeable about Ignite. He's not been involved in this latest update of Ignite. So Harris, I'm going to lean on you to ask me questions and stuff, not necessarily an interview, but it'll still be a panel here where we're talking about it. But you can help me keep the conversation going and make sure that I don't miss anything.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome. So what is Ignite? So Ignite is a boilerplate for React Native. I would say fairly undisputed that it is the top or the most popular third-party React Native boilerplate. There are others, obviously, with you know, React Native's vanilla one that just comes with it. That's the default. And Expo has a few boilerplates as well that are well loved and well used. But in terms of actual stacks with full opinions baked in, Ignite really is the most popular one out there. In 2015, we started using React Native, and then in 2016, we decided, hey, we need to put our opinions into a boilerplate. This is, you know, this got to be something where we can spin up a new app. We're an agency, so we need to spin up new apps all the time. We don't want to have to redo the first parts of, you know, of building an app. So that's where Ignite came from. And the first iteration was Redux. It was not TypeScript. It was just, you know, JavaScript, modern JavaScript. We used React Navigation. Redux Sagas. We used Redux Sagas for side effects. And we used that for several years. And then 2017, we started working on the next iteration. And we actually, at that point, moved over to MobX State Tree, which, of course, is, you know, a different state management library than a competitor to Redux, so to speak. So we also went TypeScript. We, you know, upgraded a lot of things. We made a few different choices in terms of how we organized our code and whatnot. And what's kind of funny about that, so the first one we called Andross, and the second one we called Bowser. These are all named after video game villains. And so we've been using Bowser up until this point. So we're on version 3, like I said. Version 1 was Andross, version 2 was Bowser, basically. Version 3 was a major update to Bowser and Ignite itself, which kind of, you know, it brought in TypeScript for the CLI, because there's a CLI component as well. You can type in Ignite new something and it'll actually spin it up. That's important here to have a CLI.
So is Flame version 4?
So Flame is basically version 4, exactly. Okay. And it's just a code name. You know, yeah. Why didn't I use Cyber Demon or something like that, which is actually our next code name. That's because it's actually it's bigger than just the boilerplate itself. The boilerplates have those names, but this is actually a complete rewrite of the CLI itself. So it's kind of interesting because we released Ignite CLI 2. And what we did was we basically opened it up. We made it so that you could have plugins, you know, because like, here's an example. Let's say that you have an app and you want to add maps. Well, do you want to have that in the boilerplate where every app that you spin up with Ignite has maps? That could be something you don't want to do because, you know, that brings with it a lot of different things. You know, it's a larger app and you'd have to go through and delete that. So that was kind of the problem we were dealing with. This is a kitchen sink. Do we want to do that or do we want to add it later? So plugins were the answer to that. We also had plugins for internationalization. We had, you know, various things. Boilerplates themselves were actually plugins. We actually made a system where you could make your own boilerplate. And there were a few that became popular, like there's Ignite J Hipster, which is one of the, I think, the most popular non-Infinite Red boilerplate that uses Ignite. So these were all things that were a concern at the time. And we developed this out and we released it. It's done very well, but one thing that we've really noticed, and I know Harris, you've been a part of this too, is that maintaining it can be difficult because you have the CLI and then you have separate boilerplates and they have to work well together, and then not to mention the plugins themselves and whatnot.
But yeah, definitely maintaining it can definitely be a pain.
Yeah, because you've had to kind of answer some of those questions too, like this, you know, you posted this issue in the wrong repo. You're in the CLI, you need to be over at the boilerplate, or vice versa. Plugins were especially difficult because as we would evolve the boilerplate, then the plugins would lose compatibility. And what if you had the wrong version of a plugin? It was like we were maintaining another like layer of NPM on top of NPM, like our own package manager. This was something that was kind of foreseen by Steve Kellogg, who was the kind of the brain trust behind the Ignite 2 upgrade. And he doesn't work at Infinite Red anymore, but he at the time, you know, was one of our top developers, and he was really interested in making this more of a pluggable architecture. But he did foresee that this could be a problem, and this was something he was a little worried about at the time. And it kind of came true. We eventually just stopped maintaining the plugins, which is not great, but we didn't really have the resources to do that. In fact, a lot of times it was me, it was you, Harris, it was Brian Stearns. Sometimes others at Infinite Red, but it was pretty difficult to find the time for that. So earlier this year, I just started thinking, you know what, maybe we need to simplify. Maybe we need to streamline. Maybe we need to really bring this back to the basics of what do people really like Ignite for? Well, they like to be able to spin up a new app with all of Infinite Red's opinions baked in. Not all of them, but like the basics, the stuff that you really need every single project. Then they also really like generators. And we'll talk more about generators in a bit. But those were basically it. And plugins weren't as big of a deal.
Sometimes, you know, things get outdated pretty quickly. If plugins are not maintained, that's not going to also encourage use. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I just started thinking about this and like, okay, yeah, why don't we simplify? My initial thought was I was going to rewrite the CLI and then adapt the boilerplate to work with the new CLI. And I met with Brian Stearns. Brian's awesome. He's been working in this industry for a long time. He actually worked with Steve Jobs on the original Macintosh. This is how long he's been working. like if you watch, you know, like documentaries about Steve Jobs, you'll see Brian walking by in the background. All right. This is how, this is how big of a deal he is. And somehow he works for me, which is awesome. I love having Brian around. He's the best. He is, despite having the pedigree he has, he's always excited about new technology. So I love having him to bounce things off of. But he told me, well, Jamin, why not just put them both in the same repo? Rather than trying to coordinate, you know, okay, the boilerplate knows how to play well with the old CLI and the new CLI, and the CLI knows how to play well with the old boilerplate and the new boilerplate. Why take on that level of complexity? Why don't we just recombine them back into one repository? It's a package deal. Ignite is Ignite. And I'm like, wow, I should have thought of that. I mean, that's great. That's a great insight. You know, we tried to modularize it and make it so that you could just plug things in. It didn't really work so much. So why don't we just go back to the original idea?
So I guess you've tried to over-optimize, I guess, by splitting it up. And would we still be able to have different boilerplates?
So yes-ish. So not with the new CLI. However, the old, you know, the version 3 still works. And what I've done in the new CLI as I've rewritten it, I added in, it detects if you're trying to use Bowser or Andross or J Hipster, and it tells you, hey, you're using the new CLI. In order to use these, use NPX Ignite-CLI at 3. So with the at 3, it tells it use the previous version. And if there are big, you know, issues, we'll certainly go back and release new versions of 3, which, I mean, it's barely budged in the last year and a half. So I don't think we really need to probably at this point, but that's available if people need to. So we're handling that backwards compatibility as well as we can. That's kind of the idea behind it.
Okay. So Ignite Flame is going to be rewritten CLI, but the boilerplate is essentially going to be kind of what we have with Bowser. So MobX State Tree and Reactotron.
Exactly. Yeah. We're not going to upset that too much. We're not going to try to change up too much of that. There are some improvements for sure. And I'll definitely start, you know, I'll launch into that when we kind of get to that point in the podcast, but it's going to be pretty similar to Bowser but it'll evolve though over time. It won't stay the same. There's a lot of plans that we have really based on our entire philosophy for Ignite. And this is something that we've really stuck with since we released it. Nothing gets into Ignite unless we've already tried it on at least one client project successfully, usually two, maybe three, before we bring it into the boilerplate. Because we don't want to be starting with opinions that are just opinions and not based on any sort of empirical evidence. When we can put something in there that we've used on a project, we know that it works. I mean, that's why we call it battle tested. This has actually been, you know, Ignite is something that powers big apps that are out there. And when we've used it ourselves, we do use it ourselves for new projects, then that just gives it the reliability and you're not, even if you do run into issues, it's stuff we've run into as well and we can help.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I actually am thinking now, we probably should have a section in Ignite Flame eventually where we show all the companies or all the apps out there that use it. Of course, if we can get permission from the client.
Yeah, but totally. Yeah, I would love that. I know there are a lot out there that use it, not all of which we can say. It's kind of the downside to this industry. part of the software we write is a part of some pretty big apps, but we can't really say sometimes. But yeah, the ones we can, I would love that. In fact, listeners, if you have used Ignite in any form over the years, we'd love to hear from you. Just tweet at us at ReactNativeRDIO on Twitter, and that would be something I'd love to put into a document, like Harris said. So Flame, I rewrote it from scratch. I literally spun up a new Glue Gun app. So Glue Gun is a CLI library. Basically, it powers our CLIs. There are others out there that do a pretty good job. Glue Gun is just the flavor we like. Ignite 2.0 and 3.0 were around 3,000 lines of code in 57 files. This is all TypeScript. And the Ignite Flame CLI, rewritten from scratch, is like 950 lines. So 3,000, over 3,000 down to 950 lines of code.
Wow.
In 15 files. So much, much smaller. In fact, there's one file that contains probably, I don't know, 30, 40 lines of code that really should move into Glue Gun as a core library of Glue Gun. That's something I'll probably do in the future. So it'll get even smaller. It also takes about a quarter less time to spin up a new app from scratch. So it's faster as well. It does less, which is nice. There are some things, some kind of backflips we were doing to make it work in the past, like spinning up a brand new app would require some hijinks to make it work. And one of the ways that we've achieved this is by we're leaning on the React Native CLI now rather than doing it all ourselves. We also have Expo support, so we're using the Expo CLI. We've removed a few of the features too. So plugins are gone, like you can use them with Ignite 3, but don't try to use them with the Ignite 4, Ignite Flame version of the CLI. Third-party boilerplates are supported only in Ignite 3. So if you need to support that, you again use Ignite 3 for that. There's a concept called sporking, which was always, sorry, Gant Laborde probably listening to this podcast, but I've never really liked the name of that. It doesn't really say what it does. Okay, Harris, let me ask you, what do you think Ignite sporking is?
I can see the similarity with forking, but I have no idea.
Right.
Yeah.
It's clever. It's clever, but it doesn't really address, what's happening. What it does is it copies your generator. So let me explain what a generator is. Ignite, generate, component, Harris. Okay.
Yeah.
What it does is it generates a new component in your app components folder, creates a new folder. It drops in a couple of files, like your style file and your component file and maybe some like a test or something, and it like names everything in there Harris. Everything is Harris now, and that's what the generator does. So you can just run that anytime you need a new component. If you need a new screen, you say ignite generate or ignite g screen login screen or login, and it'll generate a login screen. But sporking, so what we originally did was like it would reach out and like download the template every single time. Sporking actually would put the template into your folder, into like a special folder, like an Ignite folder, so that you could modify it. It's a kind of a cool idea. Like, I don't always want Infinite Red's version of a screen. I want my version of a screen. Maybe a particular project has a certain, you need some wrapper, or you need some, like, you always have to bring in something, maybe a different styling library or something. So just, modify it there. So that's what sporking was. But it was just not a well-known thing. I think there were people even at Infinite Red that didn't know it existed. It was pretty badly marketed and just not totally thought through 100%.
Yeah, I didn't know about it either.
Yeah. No. What happens now is everything is sporked by default. Like everything, like it just copies in your templates into your folder. So if you create a new Ignite app, you go to Ignite, like the Ignite folder in your app /templates, you'll see all of your templates there for any generator. And you can just go through and edit them. If you need to update them, you just type in Ignite. Now, this might change. So if you're listening to this podcast like a year from now, this might have changed. I don't know. But Ignite generate screen --update will actually download the old one used to and like update it. So if there was any, if you made any changes to it, then those would get blown away at that point. But you could always like keep it up to date that way. So it's a pretty cool concept and it works, I think, very well. We're going to probably release a video and certainly some documentation around how to use that. I think it's actually a very powerful concept that people really would use a lot if they if they understood, because it, the new Ignite Flame will actually support more than just the ones that that come with the boilerplate. You can make up your own on the spot. You can just be like, hey, I want the ability to generate translation files or something like that. And you can just create a generator and it will, Ignite will know how to handle that.
Nice. Yeah, actually, that does sound really useful. I've never used it, but I think I'll try it next time.
I'd like feedback on it, too. I know that some people prefer to just copy other stuff that they've already set up, which is totally fine. But I think that if the more feedback we get around Ignite generators, the more useful they'll be.
Yeah, I mean, copying other stuff, that's what I typically do. But I don't know if I like it, because often if I have like a lot of like interfaces or, you know, naming everything manually, right, and looking for, I'll definitely try it. I'll let you know how it goes.
So we're probably not going to call the boilerplate Ignite Bowser anymore. We're just going to call it Ignite. I think we'll go away from the code name idea. That's not a total final decision, but I think that's probably the direction we're going to go.
So just Ignite, not Ignite Flame.
Right. Ignite is Ignite. You're just always going to have like the latest version of Ignite or whatever, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, actually, I do remember being confused at the very beginning when I first learned about Ignite.
Mm-hmm.
Being confused as to what Ignite is and like sort of understanding, okay, Ignite is just the CLI, and then there's Bowser and Andros and and so on. Yeah,
exactly. We're reducing the number of concepts that are associated with Ignite.
Not really the topic of this podcast, but another thing I'm curious about is how did, so Glugun is an Infinite Thread project, right? So
yeah, it is. Yep.
Yeah. How did that come to be?
Right. So that was Steve's invention. I mentioned Steve Kellogg before. He wanted to kind of go to a more modular approach for Ignite. I think Ignite 1 was built on Yeoman, I believe. And that's a pretty popular CLI library. But he wasn't happy with Yeoman. There were a lot of issues with it. I think if he had found some others like OCLIF, OCLIF, which comes out of Heroku, I think if he had found that, it probably would have done the job. But at the time, there really wasn't something like that out there that made sense. So he extracted a lot of the functionality from the original Ignite CLI, rewrote a lot of it, and we released it as Glugun. And I've been maintaining it since he left. And Glugun is really cool. You can actually spin up a new CLI. It's pretty meta. You can say Glugun, like if you can do like npx Glugun new my CLI, or, you know, pizza app or pizza CLI if you wanted to order pizza on your terminal. Yeah. And it generates one for you, and then you can go in there and edit commands, and it gives you a whole toolbox of stuff. That's the cool thing about it. It's batteries included. You don't have to, like a lot of these like Commander are very, very minimal, which is fine, but then you have to make a bunch of decisions, and where Glugun comes with a lot of stuff like, hey, here's how you generate things with templates. Here's how you interact with the file system. Here's how you, you know, run commands on the terminal. This is how you patch files. There's a really cool patching library that really should be its own thing inside of Glugun.
Nice.
So there's a lot of cool functionality just baked into Glugun, and definitely something that is probably really overlooked in the JavaScript community. At the same time, I understand why. You know, Glugun is something that we haven't had the resources to really devote a lot of time to. I think that people would fall in love with it if they started using it, but you know, that's just me.
Yeah, it sounds pretty productive. I've tried Commander, and you're right. It is very bare bones. So
So the stack for Bowser, like you said, Harris, hasn't really changed. And with Flame, it won't really change. We are on the latest React Native, React Native 0.63. We're on TypeScript 4.0 or 4.1, which I just updated actually last night before we recorded here. MobX state tree 4. Whatever. That's the state management system that we use. And we've talked about it in the past on this podcast, and something that I've been doing a lot of recruiting of a new core team and building that up as the core maintainer of that one. We have React Navigation 5 for the navigation routing part of it. We integrate Detox just by default. In the past, it was like an option. You could choose, do you want Detox or do you not? Now it's just like, well, Infinite Red never chooses no detox. So let's just bake it in. You know, detox is part of it. There's a thing called API sauce, which is how you make network requests. That is something we'll probably look at in the future, because there are some other options for for network requests. But API Sauce is a pretty cool one. It's basically a wrapper around Axios. So if you've used Axios before, API Sauce just makes it cooler, nicer, easier.
One small correction, though. We're on MobX 6.0.1.
MobX 6. That's right. Yeah. My bad.
Because it is now a drop-in replacement, so we were able to skip 5. And we didn't need proxy support because 6 works for both proxy and non-proxy environments.
My bad. I meant MobX State Tree 4. Whatever. Oh, gotcha. And then MobX 6. You're right. Exactly. MobX 6. So talk about that a little bit, Harris, so that I'm not just writing over everything in this podcast. It's been a monologue. Yeah. But talk about that MobX, MobX State Tree, and then also MobX React Lite and how that kind of fits in.
We were actually on MobX 4 for a while. We couldn't upgrade to 5 for the longest time because MobX 5 required proxy mm-hmm. support. So, however, we couldn't upgrade because the Hermes engine didn't mm-hmm. support proxy, and that mm-hmm. was like a whole thing where they were discussing internally, testing it, and that took a while. And even though now they're going to potentially make Hermes on by default for both mm-hmm. iOS and Android, MobX 6 came out and actually works as a drop-in replacement where, you know, it doesn't require proxy. So I think what it detects if there's proxy in mm-hmm. the environment, and if there isn't, it just doesn't use that and falls back to whatever it was using MobX for. And it actually worked out as a drop-in replacement. I upgraded it, no problems at all in the boilerplate.
That's really cool. Yeah, they did some really amazing work with MobX 6.
Yeah. And MobX State Tree, how they all fit together. So MobX State Tree gives you the power of MobX, but sort of like I like to think of it as the benefits of like a single source of truth mm-hmm. state tree, kind of like what you have in Redux.
Yeah.
For me, it really gives you the best of both worlds where you get sort of the single source of truth, but you do get like the optimized. Right. So you do get like the, you know, for example, the computed views, which are memoized, right?
Yep.
You get the optimizations out of the box. You don't have to mess around with like the selectors. And even with like Redux selectors, you can't get the level of optimization that you get with MobX out of the box.
Yeah.
I actually always use MobX with MobX State Tree. So
yeah.
Interesting. We were discussing actually in Discord about how I saw something in the marketing thread about the name MobX State Tree. Like, it doesn't really tell you what it does.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. So Harris is on the MobX State Tree core team with me, and we've been having discussions internally because our first meeting is actually tomorrow with the new core team. One of the things that is a recurring theme throughout MobX State Tree documentation is that it describes how it does stuff. Much more than why and what's cool about it and everything. It's like, no, it's a stateful tree that, you know, it's kind of written in words that mean that they're accurate. They're not something that really connects with people. And so that's something we're going to probably really put, we're definitely going to be putting a lot of effort into making sure that we really can kind of convey what is cool about MobX State Tree. Anyway, yeah, that's, you know, obviously a whole nother thing. We'll probably be talking about it in the future a lot. Sorry to all the Redux fans. Let me just put this out there. I know we talk about MobX State Tree a lot in this podcast. You know, the fact that two of us are on the core team certainly is part of that. And we're just fans of it, you know, over at Infinite Red and otherwise. But I really don't have anything against Redux from I actually tweeted just recently that I heard about a developer whose CTO decided to use Redux over MobX State Tree because of the size of the community and the, you know, third party support and things like that. And I totally get that. That's a reasonable direction to go. And that's actually one of the reasons why I like React Native over Flutter, you know, for example. Even if Flutter's better in certain ways, the community and the third-party ecosystem means a lot. So I totally get that line of thought. I'm not trying to bag on Redux. In fact, there's some really cool things that they've been doing lately with the
Redux toolkit.
Yeah, Redux toolkit. Thank you. And they've been really addressing a lot of the feedback from the community. I also think that there's a lot of other state. This is not supposed to be about state management, but but there's a lot of other state management libraries coming out, and they all have the same flaw. They all have the same problem. Every single one of them. Redux does not. Redux and MobX State Tree are the two And you can throw on bare, like, vanilla MobX as well. Those are the only ones that really address the idea of having a centralized store. All the rest of them scatter the state all throughout all of your components and all the problems that come with that. But we can talk about that in the future. Definitely not anti-Redux here, but we've made the decision to go with MobX State Tree, MST, and that's what Ignite's, you know, that's what Ignite comes with.
One interesting thing I'd like to add is Recoil.js, which is this new internal state mm-hmm. management library at Facebook, actually takes a lot from MobX. Yeah, uses also an observable observer pattern.
Yep.
And it's a lot more similar to MobX and a lot of the ideas. So if you want to, yeah.
Yeah, Recoil is interesting too. They still have that flaw though, where you don't have that centralized store and the concept of a data tree. But yeah, I like that part, the reactive part of Recoil for sure.
Yeah.
We also have, we've been integrating a lot more deeply with Expo. So that doesn't mean that when you spin up a new Ignite app that it's going to come with, you know, like Expo, like for managed Expo workflow. What it does mean is that we have Expo's unimodules support baked into every app that you spin up, even if you're not using Expo. The reason for that is we use Expo third-party modules all the time. So Expo's team is amazing. Their developers are awesome. Every time that we reach out there, we look around and we try to find a third-party library to do something, the Expo version tends to be the best quality. It just really is. And so having unimodules baked in from the start means that we don't have to make the decision, the additional friction of, well, do we really want to integrate Expo unimodules? Unimodules, for those who don't know, allows you to run Expo libraries in non-Expo projects as well as in Expo itself. So it unifies the whole thing. You can also make the decision to just be like, well, I want to go with Expo. Managed Expo workflow. And we've done a whole project on using that. And that went really well. That is also built in. So if you pass in --Expo, it will actually use the Expo CLI to generate it. And then it will be a managed Expo project with all of the same goodness that comes with Ignite, the boilerplate. That's kind of the rundown of Ignite Flame. Right now we're recording in early December. This will come out in a couple weeks. So by that time, it should be out. If not, this podcast will give me some incentive to get it out the door. But I worked on it a lot yesterday. Got detox tests running well in both Expo and non-Expo. And detox, of course, being the end-to-end testing. And we feel that's very, very important. High bang for your buck. So when you spin up a new Ignite app, you already have a test written. You can just run yarn build --E2E and yarn test --E2E. If you are using Expo, you can just say yarn test E2E and it'll do the job. So you can start doing your end-to-end tests right away when you very first start the project. You also have Jest, of course, and everything built in. This is just part of the reducing friction part of it. So I'm pretty excited about that. Well, we should have this released and you can start using it at that point. We'll link in the show notes to the introductory blog post that I'm writing about it. Andross and now Ignite 3 are kind of on community support. So we'll review pull requests and merge them, release new versions for people. Andross support, or I shouldn't say support, but Andross usage has dropped off pretty significantly in the last, I would say, year. And we're seeing Redux, just the interest in doing Redux dropping as well. People are moving to alternatives. So that's something that I think will continue. That trend will continue over time. Redux is still fine. They're doing good work, like I said. But just in terms of if you want Infinite Red's opinions, I mean, this is really the benefit of Ignite is you're coming to us to learn from the dozens and dozens of projects we do every year and learning from all the pain points we've had. And then we incorporate the fixes right back into the boilerplate. There's little things in the boilerplate right now that you don't even know. Like if you started a new vanilla React Native app, you're going to run into it. If you start a new Ignite app, it's all smoothed over for you, which is really
nice. Yeah, it's definitely like, I would say it's weeks of work done for you right off the bat, you know, from with translations to debugging to, So
I'd like to also put a shout out here for our community, Infinite Red Slack community. If you go to community.infinite.red, there are lots of Ignite users in there. And so if you run into a problem or if you need to have something explained about MobX State Tree or TypeScript or anything else, React Navigation, there are a lot of, there's like literally hundreds, maybe thousands of Ignite developers in there talking pretty much every day. So go check that out. That's another benefit of using Ignite. I know this episode has been a lot about, you know, the stuff that I'm working on. I guess I'm just really excited about it. I feel like it's going to help the community. And at Infinite Red, we're all about community. These are the things we give away the stuff for free all the time. It's, you know, Glue Gun, API Sauce, Ignite, Reactotron. We didn't even talk about that. That's built into, you know, Ignite. Reactotron support is, you know, all of these different libraries in the community and helping people out. We're probably giving away thousands of hours of free work and help. I think that this stuff, though, it comes around, you know. I think a lot of companies would look at this and say, this is ridiculous. Why are you spending so much time and just giving it all away? But it always comes around. I've benefited so much from the open source community. I love paying it back. It's just so much fun. Okay, let's really quickly jump over to weird bugs. Harris, do you have a weird bug? Because if you don't, I do.
Yeah, I'll let you go first. I'll think about it, but I'm not sure if I do. Yeah.
All right. So in the course of doing this Ignite Flame stuff, I was working on integrating Expo localization. And it worked fine with Expo, but when I would use it in a bare, like, vanilla React Native app, it would give me this weird error, which would be like, cannot find property locale of undefined. And it was coming from within the Expo localization like library. So I went into node modules and I was looking around. I found the line of code that was erroring, and it was literally trying to import something from that was a local file right next to it, you know, like import from the same folder, this other file, and it should have the locale. Like, I looked at it, it's exporting it. Everything's fine. What the heck? And I spent, I swear, 3 hours probably trying to get this to work. One of the things that I did was I commented out the whole file to see if I could get a different error. I did not get a different error. I was like, what the heck? Well, I finally figured out that it was telling me it was coming from from localization.ts, but that was just the source map telling me that. It was actually coming from the build folder, not the source folder. So that's just something to keep in mind when you're debugging. Make sure you're working in the right file. And so I went to the other one, and yes, I could get it to error differently. But it was so weird because it just looked like it was coming in as undefined. Like, what the heck? Maybe it was, you know, a circular dependency or something like that. I don't know. But I added .js to the end of the import statement. Like, import expo localization from expo localization.js instead of just without the .js. And it started working. So weird. There was a workaround. Brent Batney from Expo gave me, I filed an issue with a minimal repro, and Brent within like 15 minutes gave me a response. Hey, just use I think it was Babel Expo. Just Expo. And use that as my Babel transform my Jest preset. And when I used that, then the problem went away. So I don't know. I don't know why I at that point had spent too much time on it and it was just like, okay, it works. I'm moving on. But yeah, that was a very weird bug. Why adding a .js to the end would work and not having .js wouldn't? I don't know. I still don't know.
Yeah, that also doesn't, like, sort of the explanation was that it was missing mocks for the expo modules, but I still wouldn't understand how the extension relates to that. So.
Yeah. All right, you got anything else?
I did run into a bug, actually. I have this Fastlane script that uploads this Android bundle to the mm-hmm. Play Store. And for the longest time, it was working fine. But for some reason, it just stopped working. Like, mm-hmm. This is like a few days ago. Just this script that I usually run to keep, you know, to push it to alpha for testing. Now, the error that I got was that at first it wasn't very obvious to me, but it was just telling me that, like, okay, well, you know, the size is too big, the bundle size. So it turns out mm-hmm. that, and I don't know if this is a new thing, but APK files are limited to 100 megabit mm-hmm. on Google Play. And all of a sudden the bundle size went up way over that. And the reason is that the team that's working on this project, so I was just helping them with some CI stuff, but the team that is working on this project added this native module, Zoom, actually, Zoom SDK, and it increased the bundle size by so much that it was way over the limit. And I did a bit of research, and there were two options. Basically, one of them is to split it into multiple bundles, mm-hmm. but I didn't like that idea. There was a more recommended option, which was to switch over from APK to this new AAB format from Google. I don't know if you've ever heard of this.
No. Yeah.
So that's kind of like what's recommended now. So APKs are kind of like, I mean, they still work, but AABs are like, AAB is sort of the new format that Google recommends.
That's cool.
And so the way to fix that was essentially, and also, AABs, I should mention, have a higher limit. So they're not capped at 100. Mm. I forget what the exact number is, but I think it's like 150 or 200.
Okay.
So essentially the solution to that was, instead of bundling it as an APK, I had to bundle it as an AAB and then upload it to Google Play.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So
that's
That's good to know, though, that there's another option out there, because it can be kind of tough to keep it below that limit sometimes.
Yeah. And it wasn't too hard to change to change it. I just had to make sure that, like everywhere else in my Fastlane scripts, or I don't point to an APK anymore, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not even using an APK anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is actually the recommended approach now anyway, but mm-hmm. most people still use APKs because they just haven't maybe hit that limit or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So you can find Harris online on Twitter at Nomadic Spoon. He's less nomadic right now, but he's still known as Nomadic Spoon on Twitter. I'm at Jamin Holmgren. As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Worth, our transcript and release coordinator, Jed Bartoski. I have to tell this story. Jed has worked for me for even prior to this business. I mean, way back to my original business for a very long time. He's also been a family friend for ages. I started calling him Jed Bartoski because I was watching the TV show Chuck, which the protagonist is Chuck Bartowski. And so I just called him Jed Bartowski. And he never corrected me, not once. I found out later when someone said, "Oh yeah, Jed Bartoski." I'm like, "You said that wrong." And they said, no, you didn't. No, I didn't. And I asked Jed, and yeah, it's Bartoski. So anyway, that's a whole thing. Todd makes fun of me every time I mispronounce it, but you know, it is. It kind of looks like it should be Bartowski when you look at how it's spelled, but. Yeah. So Jed Bartolowski, I think I nailed it there. And our social media coordinator, Missy Warren, thank you as well. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out at infinite.red/react-native. A special thanks to you all listening today. Make sure to subscribe on all the major podcasting platforms. React Native Radio is the name. And hey, while you're at it, send one of your favorite episodes over to a friend. If you do that, I would really appreciate it. We are really trying to do a good job with this podcast and hoping to get the word out there about it. See you all next time.